sure, but Bill and I will do a tag team here.
Oh, there you go.
Bill's the employee of this organization, so that means he does 98% of it. But we want to thank you for having us here this morning, and we're excited to tell you a little bit about our venture to date and our hopes for the future. So thanks again, Mary, for having us. So we will leave plenty of time for questions, but I'm going to turn this over to Bill to kind of tell you about the framework for the Global Academy and what we've done to date and what we hope to do in the near future.
Great. Thanks, Dean. And thank you very much. My style has always been very informal, so I look forward to having just good dialogue with you. We're trying to build something which is very visionary, quite different, and we hope very creative and unique in the country. And we happen to be in the epicenter of a community in the greater Dane County area where people really value education, where people are well connected through their businesses and industries to the public school systems. And so we think there's enough synergy in this area to actually do something that's going to be unique and really attractive for young people and help them and help our workforce development. So that's the overall arching kind of goal and mission of what we're trying to do. So now I'll back up just a little bit and give you, you know, a perspective that I bring to the table here, and then we can have discussion about that and how that fits in with what we've accomplished. I recently retired from having been in public education in Wisconsin for 40 years, and most recently was a school superintendent in the Middleton Cross Plains Area School District. And on my journey, which included many years as a high school principal in Janesville, Wisconsin, and a stint in Delavan, Darien as a school superintendent, I've always had a huge interest in school business collaboration, and I've been able to work with communities to kind of move things forward. Well, anyone who is well aware of our economy these days knows that it's changing at an exponential rate. And in our schools, as good as they are, and as good as they are in this area, in some cases just can't keep up with all the technological and innovation that's occurring throughout the country. So going back, I actually even did my PhD work in school business collaboration, so I've been trying to keep up with this. But it's a challenge. Well, after I retired, and I worked with Dean as a partner, as a fellow superintendent, I became aware of his vision and the vision of a number of superintendents to start something that would be innovative and creative and different. And they were calling this thing the Global Academy, which was a deliberate choice of titles. Global meaning we wanted to do something that would engage students in learning more than just about Wisconsin local concerns and issues, but try to focus our thinking way beyond into that interconnected global economy that we're all part of. And they wanted to do something that was going to provide high school age kids, highly motivated students, or students in that middle 50% who are very bright, but sometimes not settled, not sure about what it is they want to do, and maybe are just laying back because their current school is not engaging us, engaging them in a way that really motivates them. So we got into a conversation about the Global Academy, and Dean had gotten into a conversation with other superintendents. There are 16 school districts in the greater Dane County area that make up something called a Dane County Consortium for School to Career Planning, and they run programming for youth apprenticeships and other, what we used to call vocational education. Well, they wanted to take a little bit of that, but really make it much broader so that the curriculum would be less lockstep, that it would be project-based, that young people have opportunities to mentor, to job shadow, to be out in the workplaces and actually, you know, kind of getting their hands, you know, involved in some of the opportunities in this area. So that meant collaborating with businesses and industries to come up with what's the most dynamic curriculum we can think of, and something that's outside the box, something that doesn't meet for 57 minutes and then the bell rings and you go to the next class for 57 minutes. We wanted to do something different. So in late August, they hired me to help facilitate this plan, this kind of broad vision that they had. And they were able to get 8 school districts to sign on and all work together. So we've been on a journey now for 8 or 9 months, and I'll tell you where we've landed, and I'd really be interested in your reaction as to where we've actually landed. You might be interested to know the school districts are Belleville, which is a small school district, Middleton Cross Plains, Mount Horeb, Oregon, McFarland, Verona area, and Madison. And I'm happy to say that they've all been active participants in the planning. And they come at it from different perspectives. Belleville, for example, is a small school district. And it could never offer the rich curriculum or the broad experiences that larger districts like Verona area or Middleton Cross Plains or Madison can offer. So their interest is, well, we'd like to hook into something that would be exciting for our students. Dean and I know that, unfortunately, we're facing budget constraints, and in some cases we're over capacity in our school districts, and so we don't even know where to go with all of our programs. So the idea is to kind of find another location and another opportunity for young people. And we have extremely bright young people who we have the opportunity to work with. So these are pretty broad ideas. So we went out on a search, and I partnered with the University of Wisconsin, with the Center on Education and Work, and their research shows that young people who are engaged in project-based, meaningful, contemporary, provide creative outlets for their energies, and it's no great surprise, achieve at much higher levels than students who are in a more traditional school. So the research kind of supports doing this kind of work. We worked with MATC. I'm just going to do a little show and tell here so you can see who we've connected with MATC, and they've been excellent partners with us, particularly in providing areas where what we do could provide dual credit. This is one of the key components here. The students would come to the Global Academy, participate in the Global Academy, and receive credit towards high school graduation, but also some credit at either the University of Wisconsin, MATC, or other post-secondary schools in the area. So that's a real incentive for young people to become involved in the program. One of the areas that sort of foreshadowed here that we're looking at is in the area of biomedical. So we've looked at some sample curriculums and programs to see if what they offer might be something close to what we would be interested in doing. I say this with tongue in cheek, but I have a child who lives, a grown adult child who lives in Arizona, in the Scottsdale area of Arizona. And I feel a sense of responsibility every winter to go and visit him just to make sure he's doing all right. It's my parenting obligation. But anyway, out in the Arizona area, in the Mesa, Arizona schools, I came across a school called the Biotechnology Academy, which really is a prototype, we think, of what we might want to do. It's a place where young people go to a learning experience for half a day, and they engage in project-based, research-based, phenomenal kinds of learning activities for a half day, working with people from, and they have a large biotechnology industry base in Arizona, which I was not as aware of. But we have a lot of partnerships with National Institute of Health, National Science Foundation, and others who are providing grant money for them to move forward with this kind of a curriculum. So we've looked at sample curriculums, we've looked at some model programs, and then right here in our own Dane County, at Promega, on the campus of Promega, is the Biopharmaceutical Technology Center. Are you familiar with that campus area? Well, they also are offering some opportunities for young people in Dane County through the Youth Apprenticeship Program, where they have opportunities to learn more about biotechnology, and it's a very impressive program. It's limited to about 12 to 15 students from the greater Dane County area, so it's not hitting as many students as we would like to connect with through the Global Academy, but it's an example of something that can be done. Then I know you can't see all of this, but MATC has a biotechnology advisory committee with people from robotics and area hospitals and in genetics and pharmacosia and other YSL who sit on the board, and I tried the idea out with them. They just love it because they're saying, in this area of biotechnology here in Wisconsin, we have a need for all kinds of people, from simple lab technicians to major researchers. I mean, it's our area in Dane County to be developed. So we're putting all of these thoughts together, and we now know that, yes, the research would support what we want to do. People at the University of Wisconsin, MATC, are willing to work with us. Business and industry people that we've talked with, Bill Linton from Promega, for example, and others at Epic System, are very interested in what we're doing. So we know there's interest in the business community. We've talked to a number of teachers. We had teachers come forward, and we've interacted with them, and so we've got a good base of staff members who want to work with us. Then we held a number of focus group meetings 2-3 months ago. We talked with people from business and industry, not only about what the curriculum would be, but also about what we're calling the soft skills. You know, what are the 21st century learning skills that people in the workplace really need to have? So embedded in what we do will be teaching 21st century learning skills to kind of the basics of cooperation and communication and critical thinking and problem solving and statistical analysis and all of that. So that's another component of this that's kind of still in the parameters of how we're planning this. So now it comes to making this happen. And we originally had four broad areas we were going to look at, including architecture and construction, information technology, biotechnology, and then science, mathematics, and engineering. And we've now gone through a boiling down process, and we have decided to start this, we're going to choose just two big areas, where we think we have a lot of support and where we think we cannot be duplicating anything in current schools, where we'd really be doing something fresh and different. So we're going to focus on biotechnology and biomedical. Those are going to be the two focus areas for the Global Academy. And by the way, we're looking to start this in the fall of 2010. So, kind of going through a planning perk chart checklist here, you know, we've got good research, we've got good interest from staff, community, we've got curriculum areas, we have a general notion of how this thing should look, we've got some models to take a look at. So now we have two issues that we have to come to grips with. One being, where would we locate the school? And secondly, how would we finance it? So, two huge hurdles, but you know, you have to dream. The facility part of it is a challenge for us because we'd like it to be located in a location that would be accessible to those 8 school districts. So we're actually thinking the southwest side of Dane County initially for this would work well because of the 8 districts that signed on. And we were looking at some properties in the Verona area school district. And of course, we all read the newspapers, and you know that school districts are having a tough time just balancing the budget for current programs. In fact, in most cases, they're not able to even maintain current programs. So it would be a hard sell to have districts who are strapped for money right now to shift money to the Global Academy or to finance a new building. that would be tough. Even in my own school district in Middleton Cross Plains, a major referendum for schools that are currently overcrowded failed this spring. So it's a tough sell right now. We do have one opportunity to work with MATC in a building that they have just leased on the west side near Westtown Mall. They just leased the former famous footwear headquarters building, and they're in the process of renovating it to serve students and do some programming for them. They are willing to work with us and allow us to have space in that building to facilitate the programs that we're looking at. And the way school districts would finance it would be to pay, in effect, a per student, or if you will, a sort of tuition type payment for the number of kids that would select to take courses at that site. And MATC would hold the lease and would try to get on the cost. Now, if we do this right, there will be some curricular areas that MATC could develop for its students, adult students or post-secondary high school students, and offer in the evening or at times when we would not be using it. So then you've got a bit of an economy of scale here. You've got high school students using it, you have technical school students using it, and you have this building, which was an empty, vacant building from the private sector. And I think so you're blending together, it's a good use of resources, in my opinion, on how we could step this forward. Well, that same concept kind of held true for the property we were looking for in Verona to have it serve multiple purposes for the technical college and the schools. But we just weren't able to ink a deal on property and the expense of constructing something in Verona. So this seems like it's our next best opportunity. At least we have a place that we could use.
Bill, if I could just interject there. We do still have something in the works in Verona with a landholder who has agreed to donate 10 acres of land for the Global Academy. But that's in process with the City Council for Verona because the area in question currently isn't in the urban service area. It's not annexed to the part of Verona. So, and I think that will change here shortly. The City Council has given a thumbs up, at least to the concept of that, and so we hope to proceed with that. In addition, this landholder is seriously contemplating constructing a building and leasing it back to us for practically nothing. So again, these are we're dreaming here, but this is the time when we need to be doing that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so we've got a number of cards, so to speak, on the table, and we're just trying to lay them all out in front of you, and we're trying to see what's going to resonate. Let me just finish on the financing piece, and then I'm kind of done with my story. Looking for money. This I'll kind of maybe just hold up. Partially, the federal stimulus money actually may help us to a certain degree, but there is a funding source in our area right now that we've been talking about and sort of cultivating a relationship with, and that's the WIRED initiative. Workforce initiatives for regional economic development. It's money that's coming through the Department of Labor, the U.S. Department of Labor. It's money that's designed to serve a 12-county area, including Dane County, and it's money designed to retrain and or redirect the workforce. They have almost $6 million. And next week, they're going to send out a request for proposals. And we intend to request some of that funding to support the biotechnical and biomedical parts of the Global Academy. And what we need the money for is to bring together some teams of teachers and business and industry leaders and UW and MATC and sit down in a setting like this and hammer out what would be the most ideal curriculum to meet the needs of our greater area and to accomplish what Dean and I talked about. How can we do that? And so they seem to be very interested in supporting us, because the outcome will be a better trained workforce that fits nicely into our general economy. A few years ago when I was school superintendent, I did serve on the Collaboration Council here, which now has morphed into Thrive, which has talked about the regional economic development. And in healthcare, biotechnological and biomedical fit very nicely into the education goals of Thrive. So, what we're proposing here, we think, really fits well into the Dane County area, serves the 8 school districts in different ways, but important ways. And so we have moved, kind of along the planning table here up to the point where this June now, we're at least going to have some preliminary planning that each of the school districts is going to underwrite, while they still have a few dollars left in this year's budget, for a few days, and invite people from business and industry and some of the highly motivated, interested teachers, and get a proposal out there. And if we get the money, then we'll take some of that money and in the fall, develop the courses, develop the curriculum, so that by November, this coming November, we will have something sustainable and marketable that we can talk to parents and students about and say, come next August 2010, here's a learning opportunity for your children that we don't currently have, which is unique, creative, and meets the criteria of what we talked about. So we kind of went from blue sky vision here to laying something out that does have some legs, I believe, that does have some backbone and could stand. Obviously, the more we can partner with business and industry, the more we can find some resources to move this forward, the better, because that will be a challenge going forward during this time of economic slowdown and when the amount of shared revenue for school districts is actually decreasing. So that's kind of our story, and we don't want to fold up the tent just because it's tough economic times. I think you can redirect how you use resources, and so that's, we're going to keep pushing, for that. So maybe that was a factual overview, and if you want to color commentate, Dean, and add anything you can.
Yeah, let me, if I may, just a little bit. You all know the impact of the economy on your businesses and on our community and on our state and so forth, and the governor is making proposals that would have some pretty dramatic impacts on public education should they pass through the legislature, which, since the Democrats control all branches, seems reasonable to assume. And it's exactly in these kinds of times when that there is a tremendous tendency to go back to what you know. And because there's safety there, there is certainly a level of security in doing what you've always done. And the vision of this Global Academy is to break out of that, because we have young people, 15, 16, 17, 18 years old, who are ready to move on with bigger things. I like to think that juniors and seniors in high school in particular have one foot in high school and one foot someplace else. And that someplace else could be university setting, could be college setting, it could be some other undesirable place, if not directed. And so what we want to do is we want to offer a different direction for those young people, because we do not believe that the high school of 1950 is applicable to the high school of 2009. That's not meant to be pejorative to the experiences that we all had growing up through high school, but it's changed. It needs to change, and it hasn't. If you look at our high school schedule today, it looks almost identical that it did 75 years ago. There's a bell schedule, it meets at a certain time, the periods are a certain length, there's an attendance officer, there is a da-da-da-da-da-da. What has changed substantially about our high school education? And the answer to that is practically nothing. Yes, there's more technology, there's more bells and whistles, things like that, but those are all, that's all window dressing. It really doesn't get at the heart of what takes place within a classroom. And the classroom, we have to stop thinking about it as a regular classroom. Desks in rows and teacher at the front and all that garbage. Because kids don't learn that way. Well, some kids do. And my guess is that you probably don't learn well that way. Think of all the in-services that you've been a part of. You think, I just can't wait for this to end. You know, versus the other ones that you go to that are much more interactive, where you produce something, you're completely engaged, and think about your own experiences with the differences in those two kinds of environments, and that is exactly what our 16 through 18 year olds are experiencing in our high schools. So this is not more of the same. And even though we're focusing on two areas, it is not about producing a workforce for those two areas exclusively. That would be a nice outcome. But what's more important is that for the students that are engaged in Global Academy to learn how to adapt to their changing environment. So even though they may have expressed an interest in being in a biomedical field, you know, at 18 years old, what do you know? You know that, well, right now I think this is really neat, but 2 years from now I don't think it's so neat, I think that's neat. But what are the skills that they're going to need at age 20, at age 30, at age 40 that we can help them acquire at age 16? And that is collaboration around teamwork, communication, writing skills, reading, either technical or other, and all those things, the design of experiment, all those things that are transferable to any number of different activities, fields. So the Global Academy is more than just producing a workforce for a particular niche. It's about cultivating this idea of continual growth and adaptation. And we like to think of it more than just adaptation, is leading, not just reacting. So that's what we're really after here. Now, the danger that we have right now is that with our current funding system for public education, it leaves little room to experiment, because the detractors will say, this is not proven. This is not a proven venture. Well, of course it is. But when has that stopped people from experimenting before? And it's particularly this kind of attitude that I think has been the downfall of a lot of great industries in our country, and that is, you get in this mindset, okay, the first thing that we're going to cut is research and development. You know, we got to hunker down, do what we do best. The hedgehog concept could be great. And there, certainly I apply to that and I subscribe to that to a degree. The hedgehog concept, though, has blinders on it. In that you've got to be able to think outside of the norm and be able to risk outside when times get tough in particular. So our economy right now, I think, has the single greatest detrimental impact potential on doing something that we absolutely need to do. So what do we do about that? Talk to groups of people like you who are influential in the community and enlist you to get in the ears of people that make policy about, we have to keep funding these kinds of activities, these ideas. Even though times are tough and there isn't much to go around to support what we have already, this is exactly the time when we need to support this. So that's what we really want to enlist you to help us with today. And anybody else that you have the ear of, policymaker, neighbors, people who are influential like you need to hear this and understand this. And we need to not circle the wagons and shoot in like we generally do when times get tough. So, Bill says, I only get 5 minutes to talk, and I think I spent that. So, thank you. Yes?
Yeah. what are your thoughts for funding after the federal money runs out?
Well, we're not certain that the federal money can be used for this, to be quite honest with you. If we look at our school district, Verona Area School District, we have limited flexibility, frankly, in what we can use that money for. The vast majority of the money is going for special education. We're getting about $1.2 million over the next 2 years. About $1 million of that is going for special education. And because our school district has been identified for a disproportionate representation of African-American students with special needs, the restrictions on how we can use that money are tremendous. Other school districts that aren't so identified, but even they have tremendous restrictions. The other $200,000 of that goes for Title I services, which is reading services primarily, for students that are free or reduced income. So there's really a lot of restrictions on what that money can be used for. So I don't see from our standpoint, from the Verona Area School District, how we could really parlay this into helping us with the Global Academy.
There are really two ways of looking at the federal money. The one would be the stimulus money that's coming directly to school districts, and the other would be the federal grant proposal money that we're asking for. So maybe your question also included that part of it. But if we were to get, say, a couple $100,000 or $100,000 to get started, if it's a good idea and if it's sustainable and supportable, then I think it will become part of the regular budgets of school districts. But it's needing that incentive money to get it going that I think would be helpful initially. So that would be the federal money coming from the Department of Labor through the WIRE grant, which is yet another bucket that we're looking to.
I have several questions. You talked about a half a day. You mean a half a day every day?
Yes.
Okay. So it's like a work-to-learn kind of program that other kids experience now in schools. I mean, I knew some kids over at LaFave that were, you know, in classrooms in the morning and doing automotive or other things, business experiences during the day. So similar to that.
Yeah. I'm glad you asked. If I could just expand on that and follow up. We think it's important for high school-age kids to keep their identity with their home school. So we're looking at this in terms of a half day program, and then the other half of the day would be in their home school so they can maintain their involvement in music and drama and athletics and publications and all the other things that add to the enriched experience of high school age kids. So we think that model would be maybe the most prone to be successful. And it is true, there are other, we used to call them vocational education programs. That's a term most people are familiar with, and then we sort of morphed it into tech prep, and then now we call it school to career. These programs are much more vocationally oriented, much more job training specific. Where young people might go and serve an apprenticeship in the automotive industry and learn how to become a mechanic, or they might serve an apprenticeship in the food service area and learn culinary skills. I think what Dean and the other superintendents envision is something broader than just training for a specific career. They're looking at exposure to a whole array of possibilities within a career cluster, like biomedical or biotechnical. So we think it would broaden the exposure rather than, and there's nothing wrong, by the way, with a high school kid choosing to do something in high school and learning how to do it and then going out and getting a job in that area. That model has worked fine. We're trying to not get rid of that. We're just trying to provide an additional opportunity. I like to call it breaking the 2x4, breaking away from the two covers of a book and the four walls of the classroom. Breaking the 2x4, doing something different out there, project-based.
Nancy, go ahead.
I guess the other the other parts of my question have to do with, you know, you talk about funding or who's going to support it. I mean, having been on the school board, having been involved with the chamber, the business education partnership, and finding such resistance from the system to anything from the outside, you're asking us to be pressure. We've been pressure for a long time. Where's Tony Evers on this? You have a new superintendent. Where is he on trying to facilitate the kinds of changes that you as educators see are necessary? Because I think the business community's seen it for a very long time. Parents have known it for a very long time. But it's the educational establishment that's so resistant. So it's great that you've got these great ideas, but where are your colleagues? And where is the governor? And you know, what success are you having from the inside? Because if there's going to be money, like the Virtual Academy, they're trying to shut that down. You're a new innovative concept. They will shut you down. So how do you get your own internal organization to modify their view?
Well, you don't earn as many gray hairs as I have without learning a few things about the political system. So Dean and I have actually met with Sonny Pope Roberts, who is our representative, very supportive. In fact, she put $50,000 into the budget proposal. I don't think it's going to make it through because of the crunch, but she acknowledged the importance of it, and she's very supportive. Dean and I both know Tony Evers well. We've had conversations with him, very supportive of the idea. I think probably a lot of people are wondering, well, is this going to make it through the hoops, you know, before they're going to really get behind it, because there's some political capital to play here. Some teacher organizations are going to push back because of a threat to their current program or curriculum or job status. We know that. There's some contract language in some of the school districts we're working with, including my former district in Middleton, which are going to be a little bit problematic. But like Dean said, if you just hole up and withdraw, it'll never change. So I can be out there swinging because I'm not hired anyway. I'm nicely retired. So I believe in this. This is important. Let's go after it. And Dean is a bold leader. He'll go after it. So I think that's how we get this done. I don't think teachers in general who are privately very supportive of this are going to get out in front of it unless they have some leadership from people like us who are going to, in the end, support them and really, you know, plow through. So, you know, again, having a conversation with you is very important. I've talked to different chambers, school boards. Virtually everyone is supportive. So, yeah, let's go. So I'm very encouraged by that. On the other hand, I'm realistic enough to know that people are going to raise some barriers and push back.
That's your funding source. Yeah. I mean, when you think about it, their money is taxed to the students now, and it follows them wherever they go, and they're already chomping at the bit that money follows kids. Yeah. If we're about education, that's exactly what we want.
We have, just as an example, I don't mean to single out any particular company, but we did write for a substantial grant through the Monsanto Corporation, again, in a biotechnological company. There are lots of large companies here that might see the value and benefit of this. And if we can fund this, even through National Science Foundation or National Institute of Health, the medical school at the University of Wisconsin, it has an interest in supporting this because of some of the things they're trying to do. I mean, young people don't think about becoming epidemiologists, but a respiratory therapist is just something you don't think about. And yet, in that whole realm of biomedical, that's something that young people could be exposed to through what we're talking about, and provided some on-site, you know, learning opportunities. Well, maybe they would step to the plate and help finance part of this. We've got to provide the vision and the opportunities first, I believe. So that's where we are. Certainly not done.
The other thing contribute to that would be that Bill and I have been around long enough certainly to understand the political nature of all of this, and we understand too that as supportive as our district representatives have been, both Sandy and John, John Urbanbach, in order for them to be effective, they need to retain their seat in office, and the only way they'll support things going forward, unless they're willing to risk giving up their office, is to have some idea that they're going to be support at the polling places for them. And so, we need to enlist people like you to get in the ears of our colleagues to say you have to support these kinds of things. You must support this. This is not the time when you draw back in. So let me tell you a little bit about my former state, the state of Iowa. And I think the vision that they had years ago about producing a workforce, and that was the state of Iowa supports students who dual enroll in technical colleges while they're still in high school. They pay their tuition, plus a little additional amount for administrative stuff for the school district that's sending these kids. Nobody makes any money on it, nobody loses any money on it, but the state of Iowa produces a workforce that stays largely in the state of Iowa. They still have a brain drain, but it isn't nearly the extent that it is in the state of Wisconsin. So we hear a lot about, and mostly lip service, frankly, I think, about retaining the bright young people that we have in the state of Wisconsin. Well, okay, well, that's fine. Now let's do that. So one way to do that is to support these children as they matriculate through school and they get to a point where they think that, okay, I'm doing my duty here, but I'm really not engaged. I'd rather be doing something different that's more engaging. I don't think we have that opportunity for them. And I don't think, frankly, we have the political will within the legislature currently to support that, especially in these hard times. And I think, again, just to sound like a broken record, this is exactly the time we need to do it.
Judy and Tom and Phil and Mel.
Well, first of all, I want to commend the two of you for being the risk takers and leading an innovative effort. And as Nancy said, I worked on the virtual school initiative with a consortium of school districts, so I know the pressure that you're going to be under. But I'm wondering, could you address how this would be staffed? Because I think we all know that the union is going to be they're going to have some major concerns. And I just want to understand a little bit about how you're staffing. And then you mentioned that if there's not public financing, that you would go after private. And I would encourage you to do that, because if we can't get public, let's just keep going some other way. So if you just...
I'm going to be a little bit careful in trying to respond to your question about how we're going to staff this, because we're currently working with some superintendents who are in the process of negotiating contracts with their teachers, and so they're mindful of what we want to do here. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to say anything that's going to undermine any negotiations that are going on. But we need to assure really good teachers that if they step forward and work in the Global Academy, they're going to retain their seniority, or they're going to retain their hiring status within their local district, because the Global Academy might not succeed, and then they would be out on an island someplace without the support of the school district. So we need to provide some kind of way, elastic way, in which they can take the risk and still be part of their school district. So that's an important piece. We think that most teachers would retain their hiring status within their local school district, and they would be paid the salary that they would have been paid in their local school district, so just be an extension of their contract. We haven't ruled out, and this is where I've talked to Tony a little bit, we haven't ruled out charter schools or a different way to certify teachers who work in this kind of an environment through the Department of Public Instruction. We're still in a transition at the DPI, so we haven't broached that topic. And again, we're taking measured steps here because we don't want to blockbuster that and just blow it all up and get everybody riled up. We have to run a smooth transition, because you do understand, right? It seems to me that the politics of working with teacher organizations, and you know, sometimes the organization, I think Dean said this too, stifles creativity, holds people back, and we want to provide a safety net as well as an outlet. So kind of a dual purpose here. It's an evasive answer, but it's the best I can do.
It's helpful, because you're walking a fine line, especially Dean as a superintendent. It's keeping the teachers in the district happy, as well as encouraging them to be innovative. And that's a tricky job.
You mentioned possible resistance from teacher organizations. Seems to me that's an understatement. You got a brick wall there to run through to get the unions behind you, and you can't. I don't think you'll ever get any place in the legislature, or maybe the DPI, or the governor, unless you can get those teachers' unions behind you, and anything that means change is self-threatening, they're likely to veto. I'd like your comment.
If I can, you know, there's a dichotomy here. I would agree with your statements generally, but when you talk with individual teachers, when you separate out individual teachers, there's hardly one that I've talked to that doesn't agree with this. That the high school teachers say, yeah, we need to do something, you know, because we look out in a classroom of 25 kids and half of them might be tuned in and half of them might not be at any one particular time, and you ask them, do you recognize kids out there that are really ready to move on beyond this environment? They'll say absolutely, and they'll point out which ones, and they'll be right 98% of the time. So individually, teachers get it. It's that collective, however, you know, and it's no different than the organizations that you belong to. And you think about what stifles innovative thinking in organizations. It's not the individual; it's the collective. And it's all around the security about what we know, what we've done, what we're used to, what we're familiar and comfortable with. And I think that's just human nature. So what do we do about that? Is you keep enlisting the help of the individual and you work toward the collective. Because if you gather enough critical mass, then the individual becomes a collective. And you change that way of thinking. You know, a different way of doing it probably wouldn't be as successful for us, is if you blow up the situation. You know, I'm sure many of you are familiar with the writing of Clayton Christensen, where he talks about disruptive technologies and what they've done to the high-tech industry or industry in general, right? So we're kind of plodding along, doing what we've done, things are comfortable, we do a little bit of research and development, but then something comes in that just completely disrupts everything. And it's usually cheaper, it's usually faster, it fills a niche that people didn't even think about that they needed. That's a different way of doing it. We don't think that has as much probability of succeeding, because what we're talking about is an enormous institution called public education. And that sounds pejorative, and I don't mean it to, because I'm a believer in public education. I'm a lifelong supporter of it. But I also understand that it is an enormous entity, and to try to think that we're going to blow that up is foolish thinking, I think.
Tom, if I could just give you a little anecdote. When I was out in Arizona and we were going through the biotechnology center, I was with my wife, and she's worked in the medical field, and so she's always, you know, been my soulmate in terms of consoling me with all the union issues and grievances and late board meetings and, you know, listen. Anyway, so we're going through this biotechnology center in Arizona, and it's just phenomenal, and the kids and the teachers are interacting, and there's a synergy there that is like nothing I've ever really seen. And so she asked the question that you just asked. She asked the teachers, how did you get this done without the union pushing back? How did this happen? And the teacher's response said, not an issue. Out here, it's not an issue. Well, that's really important, because we've got to break out of our neighborhood here. Maybe our unions, and I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, are holding us back in ways that isn't occurring in other areas. So let's take a look at those other areas and find out some things about them, and then try to bring that back to our area so we can be more cooperative. And I don't think we're talking about bringing in people from business and industry and supplanting teachers. We're not talking about that model. We're just talking about taking teachers from the classroom in school A and having them work in the Global Academy. So it's not as radical, you know, or threatening a shift as in some states where they're looking at non-traditional certification or bringing in people to supplant teachers. So I'm hoping that through the dialogue that we have ongoing with boards of education and with citizen groups and teachers, that we'll be able to have this, you know, be an evolution rather than a revolution. And I think that's maybe the way I can see this happen. But I appreciate your comment on realism, because it will be a hurdle. There's no doubt about it. But I'm trying to talk about how we might want to get over it.
I would suggest that you cast your political net a little wider than you may be doing.
Okay.
One of the things when you're looking at people who would support you in office is you might look at who contributes to their campaign. So, for example, while I commend Zondi for supporting a $50,000 grant, the current administration is very much tied into the WEAC. So I would suggest that if you're expecting them to take your side versus WEAC, that's unlikely. At the same time, if you're casting your lot with a political party, please remember that the current party in power right now is there for the first time in 15 years. So you might want to be looking at the Brett Davises of the world, the Ripps of the world, the Fitzgeralds of the world, who are supportive of education, but might not be as supportive of some of the traditional models. The idea of going one teacher at a time is a good one, with the exception of the fact that they don't control the media. And having a majority of them does not necessarily mean you're going to change policy. Because you are looking at something where you're talking, at least from what it sounds, of taking kids and putting them for half a day in a different environment. And that environment is not necessarily going to improve if you take a high school teacher and move that teacher with the child to a different environment. To tell you a very quick story, some of you have heard before, but I'm not qualified to teach in Wisconsin schools because I'm a former college professor. And when a certain school district gave me a call and said, DPI has now required a section on Native Americans, what should we do, since that happened to be my field? And I said, well, I have several MAs working for me, highly qualified, just have them come up, pay them something. They know their field well. Well, they couldn't do that. So instead, they assigned a high school teacher to teach the section. And my kids who took the course would come home and we'd laugh and we'd talk about it. Then I'd tell them what was actually happening. And that was simply because they could not utilize someone from the school district. So, again, you're not necessarily breaking the mold if you're using the same level of expertise, simply in a different building.
If I can comment on that, thank you for your observations on that. I think it's really important for us to not get into thinking that because somebody comes from outside with an expertise makes them a good teacher.
No, of course not.
Nor does it mean that a good teacher can't provide expertise that somebody from the outside could do. We have a number of our staff members that are engaged in activities during their summer times that are different and that add to their repertoire. And we've all known those very good teachers that you've had that that for us do it and they make the difference. And so we think that with the thousands of teachers that we have in Dane County, we can certainly enlist the help of some of those to help us with this endeavor that can reach the kids, that can bring that level of expertise. They just, instead of choosing to do a highly academic pursuit through a college or university or through a business venture, they've chosen to dedicate their work to children. Doesn't make them any less capable. So sometimes the public in general gets in that way of thinking that because you're a public school teacher, you are somehow less able to provide high levels of expertise and learning to an environment.
And that was not my assumption. On the other hand, don't assume that if you do not have a teaching degree, you cannot teach.
Precisely.
Because I also taught teachers when I was down at UW-Whitewater and Marquette University. And don't assume, on the other hand, that this is not meant to be derogatory, having a teaching degree makes you a good teacher.
I absolutely agree with that. Yep.
So be flexible. And it sounds like you are.
How many of you read in the last 2 or 3 weeks a story in the Wisconsin State Journal about a team of high school students and their teacher who were very successful in a rocket launch experiment and received $60,000 and national recognition. Did you happen to see that? That's the kind of teacher that we're looking for. That's the kind of program that we're looking for. That teacher, in fact, we're trying to become involved in our planning this summer. It's an experience for kids that took them way beyond anything that's usually offered in our schools. And if we get a whole school that's kind of focused on that kind of learning experience, I think that comes closest to maybe describing what we're looking for.
Last week I read this book. It's called The Beautiful Tree, uh-huh. And it's by an Englishman, James Tooley. And he was interested in education, and he went to India and somehow stumbled onto a bunch of private schools in slums. Even though there was a public school close by, he found out that, the teachers are from a different culture, different area, and the caste system is fairly strong in India. They wouldn't show up for school, they didn't teach, so people in the slum area started schools, just in any building, whatever, and were teaching kids, and even the poor people would make enough sacrifice to be able to pay a small fee to get their kids to go to a private school where they actually learn something. Now, this is maybe a little bit off the subject, but he also found this to be true in a lot of African countries and even in China, in the rural areas in China. So he somehow got a guy from New Zealand to contribute $100 million. His name is Richard Chandler. To his thinking outside the box, and his thought is to he was concerned about how are you sure that these private schools are really giving the kids an education. So he's in the process of he lives in Hyderabad, India right now. He's been working in India first to set up a franchise system where these schools would have to pass certain criteria. And then be certified by this franchising organization, so the parents would know right away that this was a school where they could send their kids and they would actually get an education. And so maybe you got to think outside the box and use. And his idea was to use private capital. And maybe you do this and you franchise this all over the United States. That's the way you get some private funding involved.
We would love for Bill Gates to send us a check.
Yeah. And the other thing I would suggest is that you talk with John Matthews, if you could ever get him behind you.
And that's an interesting, and I'll just, because we kind of all know the politics of, and we all thrive in politics in this area, but this is probably good to share. The current superintendent, Dan, in Madison, has a real good vision for this, is a good partner with us, is sharing this with John Matthews on an information basis, so that it's not going to catch people in influential positions off guard. And where he is in his thinking, I don't know, but the discussion is occurring.
I happen to know him personally through some various things, and I would suggest that the two of you make an appointment for him. Sit down and talk to him face to face. He'll feel better about it if he deals with you directly rather than through a third party.
That's good.
Make a difference.
All right. Thank you.
Jeff? I just want to follow up on Nancy's comment that the money follows the kids. I mean, we're thinking about sort of making an argument to the collective and teachers' unions. If we have an opportunity like this, we're going to keep children enrolled in our school districts, rather than having the large number of transfers out of district that, for instance, Madison has seen. We're also going to attract businesses and families to move into the area because they know their kids are going to be educated. And this is going to bring money, which means it's going to keep the teachers employed. So, I mean, I think if you sell it as this is something that's going to increase enrollment, increase funding, that might be a way to sell it. And also, in terms of taxing, or not taxing, but asking districts to contribute, the argument can be, well, we're keeping your students enrolled in your district because they have this opportunity rather than leaving.
I think that's an excellent point. I also would add that I think it adds to the political support of public education. People perceive that it's really doing the job, or it's willing to do some different things to better meet the needs of students. Overall, you gain more political support for public education. I thank you for that point.
If I could, one more thing to that is, in my role, I get calls frequently from parents who are moving into the area, and they're shopping. They're shopping for a school, and that's what good parents do, you know, because their number one investment is their kids, of course. And so they shop around, and in Dane County, they have 16 excellent school districts to choose from. That's a high-end shopping mall there. But the downside to that is you have 16 school districts that are in competition for those kids because the money follows the kids. And so we all try to create similar programs, and we can't do it. We are tapped out trying to do that. Keeping up with the Joneses are us. So this idea also, it speaks exactly to what we were talking about. You know what, it doesn't matter where you land in Dane County, because there's opportunities for your kid. They may not be in your home school district, but the opportunities are there. And there's research out of Michigan State University as it pertains to dual language schools, in this case, Chinese. And that in Lansing, Michigan, they have a school that was the poster child for withdrawal, student exodus in massive numbers. They had instituted this dual pedagogy school, not dual language. It's a dual language, but it's dual pedagogy. So half the day is taught in a pedagogical style that you would find if you were in any Chinese school. The other half of the day is spent in a traditional American pedagogical approach. And what the research has shown there in this, and they've had about 5 years of this, is now they are turning kids away from the school because they don't have the capacity for it. So in follow-up studies with the parents, they say, well, why are you choosing to come here? And they're choosing to come here because of the opportunity that it has for their kid in a global sense. That we're not going to be competing with Bill Rice next door at 307, but we're going to be competing with